Blog Talk Radio.
Less detail of the podcast on a Wednesday night, January 1st, 2014. I'm Dre, he's Jay. We have made it to a second year of the show, technically. I believe we're still on the air so far, so we're doing better than the last show. I haven't cut off on anyone yet. And Jason, we can start off with the horrible news from my perspective and the great news from your perspective, which would be the year-end season numbers for our picks.
Yeah, I've been waiting for those. We didn't have a week 16 recap because of Christmas, and haven't seen the week 17 numbers yet. I'm figuring you didn't want to put them up on the blog, or you were just waiting to roll them out here. But all I know is was just hoping to get through week 17, 3-3 against you head to head, so I could carry that 12 game lead into the playoffs. And you gave me four more.
So I gave you four in week 16?
Yeah.
I gave you four in week 16, and I gave you four more in week 17. So I gave you, what was it, 9 or 10 to start off the year in week one? Was it we differed on 10 and there was a push, so I gave you 9. Is that right? Yeah, that's right.
9 in week one. I know at one point during the season you got to within 3. And then I know after week 13, you were only 4 behind me, which means over the final 4 weeks of the regular season, you gave back 12 games. I'd be really interested to see just over that span what our records were like, because that's a huge swing in the numbers. You know, I was actually you were puffing the chest out a little bit that you were running me down, but you're going to have to pull one of my moves now, because usually, see, for folks who aren't familiar with the way we do this, usually you have the big lead, and then I chase you down in the playoffs. I have not had a lead like this going into the playoffs in any recent memory. It's been a long time since either one of us have really gone in with a 16 game cushion. But I'm sure in the points it's probably a lot closer to maybe like 10 or 12 points. So you might want to explain our system.
Indeed, I will. The raw stats first would be your 10-6 from last week put you at 134, 116-6 for the season, which gives you a pretty staggering 53.6% against the spread for picking every game this year. No cherry picking, no deciding that this is your lock and getting extra points. Every game counted as one. 250 games with 6 pushes. And you won 134 of them, and I won 118 of them, which is, in any language you want to use, an ass-kicking. So you're 536 against my 472 percentage by going 118, 132, and 6 on the year. For our scoring system, it's very easy to explain because it's very basic and rudimentary because I invented it, and I couldn't come up with anything too complicated. I'm certainly no math major. But basically, I was looking for some sort of points system to make that season-ending percentage mean something, for it to represent something. That's why we keep up with the percentages throughout the year, is so that we're going to take the raw percentage at the end of the year, multiply that by 200, and come up with a number. Your number in this case would be 107.2. which is a pretty massive number to start off the playoffs with, considering our usual point systems. Probably around 100 is usually a good starting point. And my starting point would be 94.4 this year, which is 12.8 points behind you. And that's a lot.
And, well, yeah, we have 33 points in the postseason, because we'll go 2 points for the wild card weekend per game, 3 points for the divisional round, 4 points for each championship game, and 5 points for the Super Bowl. And we've actually been that point system since the very beginning. It's funny because 25 years of doing this, we have always done this 2, 3, 4, 5 postseason, but for the first, 15-some-odd years, we didn't have this point system. So we would do this on just raw wins, which would mean I'd, under the old system, I'd actually have a 16-game lead on you, but we did not want the chance for either one of us to run away and hide, because that has happened once in our history where we didn't even have to pick the postseason because one of us was more than 33 games ahead of the other one, if you could believe that. But it was a long time ago. I couldn't even tell you what season that happened. That's back before all the records were lost.
Yeah, this is pretty damn close, though. For you to have basically a 13-point lead, and I can't even make that up in the first weekend of games. There's 8 points on the line between this coming Saturday and Sunday, and even if I disagreed on all of them with you on purpose, I could still only get to within 5 points. Not that I was planning to do that, but I won't rule it out. I'll keep that possibility open because I might be getting desperate early, folks. So that's
well, of course, you could always disagree with me on all four of them, lose all four of them, and this is all over.
That's true. Considering how our year has been going, that would certainly seem to be what would happen more so than anything else. But, am I crazy, or did you pull out a whole lot of half-point and one-point wins over me this year? This might be sour grapes or bullshit or something on my part. I don't know, but it sure seemed like it was like a 5-to-1 ratio. I didn't go and count it up, but it sure felt like that. And for every 5 times you hooked me by a half a point, I may have hooked you like once. It was quite the year for you as far as getting me by a half a point.
It did happen. I mean, you don't get the leads that you get doing what we do without a little help, without a little luck, or without the ball bouncing the right way. I even went so far as to comment on the blog this week in my recap. I had 2 total bullshit covers. I am the first person to admit when I get bullshit covers, because I love them. I mean, cheap wins count just as much as the ones that you work really hard on and you break down. But to get the 1-point cover on the Texans and Titans, with a just a late, completely meaningless field goal to get them a 6-point loss for the Texans versus the 7-point spread, and then the Lions-Vikings, 2 completely ridiculous covers where I benefited from both. Those could have easily flipped your way, and those could have very easily have gone your way. Now, the rest of the covers that I had, I earned. I mean, I had all those picks right. They were generally close. But you got to get some of the cheap ones. Who knows? All it's gonna with the points being accelerated here now, all it's gonna take is for you to pick up a couple points a week. It always seems to happen this way. You can just chip away at that lead, and I'm sure there'll be a cheap cover or two coming in the postseason. It's why we have this system to kind of compress things a little bit. Now it makes the playoffs very meaningful.
Well, we've been doing the blog now for 4 years, and this threatens to have a very good chance of being the very first time since doing the blog that the season isn't going to come down to the damn Super Bowl. So it's been crazy how we've been pulling that off. We haven't been trying to do it that way. It just happens to work out that it always comes down to who wins the Super Bowl, wins the whole season. But you're in position to not have that happen at all. You can put me away real quick. No pressure.
You're just talking me up now. I know what you're doing. I know. You said that after week 1. You told me after 1 week, after I put up a 9-game lead on you, that all the pressure. I'm trying to do something very rare. I'm trying to go wire to wire.
Indeed. I have not had a lead on you.
I cannot remember many seasons where one of us didn't flip the lead at some point on the other one.
Yeah.
But spotting me 9 in week 1 definitely helped.
In my one last gasp to retain any credibility, I will say that the two playoff games, the two games that mattered the most, where it's win or go home. We both had the same teams, and we both went 2-0 against the spread, so congratulations to us.
Yes, if we would have played a two-team parlay and just those been the two teams, we could have cherry-picked our way to a nice one there. I'm loving that I nailed an X factor. I got that. You even texted me when the Bears trotted out the old cover zero against Randall Cobb, and all of a sudden my phone lights up. It just says X factor. I'm like, yeah, I believe I called that one.
You couldn't have called it any better. Only two catches, they're both for touchdowns, and one of them is the game winner. That's about as much of an X factor as you can have.
Yeah, and if you go back and watch the highlight of that play in that Bears-Packers game, Randall Cobb gets even with his defender, and the hand goes up. I mean, just shoots up over his head because he saw nothing but green in front of him and must have obviously seen what defense the Bears were in, which was don't cover Randall Cobb. That must have been the play call. You know, you always made fun of the old cover zero. You're, let him go. You know, no.
That's what it looked like.
And, yeah. I mean, Aaron Rodgers didn't even have to, just all he had to do was put some mustard on that thing and throw it deep. And he did completely off balance. That ball just hung up in the air for a while, you know. And I'm watching it on TV, and all of a sudden you see him just chuck it deep, and you're thinking, oh, my God, what's he doing? It's like fourth down. And then the camera pans down the field, and you're like, oh, my God. Oh, no. Could you imagine being – I'm not a Bears fan. I couldn't even imagine what that's like for you watching the pan down towards Randall Cobb, and all of a sudden he's just – but, I mean, you're used to this, right? You're used to them not covering defenders. You're used to Steve Smith and Reggie Wayne and all these guys just running free unopposed through the Bears secondary.
And the list goes on and on.
Yeah, not a good time to trot out that coverage.
And so clearly the Bears' problems, you can't blame this on Jay Cutler, but clearly that defense is world-class atrocious and needs to be overhauled in the offseason. And the killing part about that for a Bears fan has to be that, like you said, Aaron Rodgers is stumbling around in the backfield. He almost gets tripped up on that fourth down play and goes down. They were a fingernail away from getting the big sack and turning it over on downs and putting the game away. And all because he was able to keep his balance and stumble to the outside of the tackle, he was able to look downfield, see the Bears playing their version of the cover zero, and just heave it down there for the game-winning touchdown. It's just incredible how the Bears have a knack for doing that. And that defense, there's another thing that Jay Cutler apparently did wrong, is he made the rest of the Bears' defense just lay down in the middle of the field and not try to pick up a loose ball that Aaron Rodgers fumbled, where Jared Boykin was able to pick it up and run it in for a touchdown with nobody trying to stop him because everyone else just completely quit playing football.
Yeah, and actually the first person to touch that ball was one of the Bears defenders who almost made like this half-hearted attempt at picking it up and then just kind of swatted it down on the ground and just ran away like, ah, fuck it. I don't care. And Boykin just walks over there and he's just standing there and Rodgers is like, hey, why don't you just run that thing in there? I don't think I've heard a whistle. It was just completely crazy play. But that just, you know, that definitely they got caught not playing to the whistle. You can't describe that any other way. And, of course, that was all Jay Cutler's fault. I'm glad you pointed that out.
That's Cutler. He doesn't know how to cover receivers. He doesn't know how to pick up loose balls. He's a pussy. He's no leader. You need to get rid of him. You know, Lovie Smith, for all the criticism that he got as not being a smart game manager and all of that stuff, and it was all true. And the Bears played so much cover zero under Lovie Smith. You know, there were plenty of receivers left open under Lovie as well. Terrible safety play seems to be something that the Bears just do. What they did not do under Lovie Smith was let loose balls lay there in the turf. They jumped on every loose ball, even while four officials are running in, blowing whistles, blowing plays dead. They were trained to jump on loose balls and make sure that they're covered up. No chance does that ball lay there if Lovie Smith is still the coach of the Chicago Bears. Not saying that Mark Trestman is bad. Not saying that the firing of Lovie Smith was wrong and the hiring of Mark Trestman was wrong. I'm not saying any of that. I'm just simply making the observation that whatever faults Lovie Smith had as a coach, his teams never let a goddamn football lay there in the middle of the field and let a Packer pick it up and run it in completely untouched.
I have to say, you know, it's kind of like, so get off the Bears here in a minute, because we've kind of put the, well, at least we're done talking about that team now through at least the postseason, because this is sort of the eulogy of this team right now. But I am, we talked about this early in the year. I'm not so convinced they ever had a great defense, because their defense just had that knack of scoring. You know, the, their defense became an offensive weapon for them, because that defense was, they'd punch the ball out, they'd get the pick six, very timely. And when they lost that, I think we just suddenly labeled them as a lousy defense. I don't know if they were ever a great defense. They were just really good at scoring.
Yeah,
and
yeah, creating turnovers and scoring.
Yes, and when they missed that, they were exposed. I think they've been exposed for a few years. They got exposed in that Super Bowl against the Colts, where Brian Urlacher pulled the biggest disappearing act you've ever seen, because he couldn't shed a block, which was always sort of the rap on him. It was like he was just great in space. I mean, if he had a straight line to somebody, he'd make the tackle, but put a hat on him, he couldn't do anything. And that was sort of the beginning of the end of this vaunted Bears defense, but they were scoring their way to these numbers. And it didn't happen anymore. So it would put more pressure on the offense.
Yeah. So the Green Bay Packers make it into the playoffs. We'll have time to talk about them. They'll be playing this coming weekend. So congratulations to them. And now let's move on and eulogize the other team that lost the loser go win or go home scenario. That would be the Dallas Cowboys, who got so close to winning that game with Kyle Orton, who had a pretty damn good game, all things considered. He covered that number easily. Anybody who ran out and put down money on Philadelphia minus 7 points as soon as they found out Tony Romo was not playing, they had to be feeling really dumb, because Dallas hung right in there. Kyle Orton made plays, looked a little bit like Romo out there at times, making some plays with his legs, not too many, but still keeping them in the game when you would think that it was going to be over. Every time Philadelphia made a nice defensive stop and you thought, well, this is the end of the Cowboys, Orton rose up and made another big play. Of course, in the end, he makes the big play to lose it, throwing behind Jason Witten and throwing the interception to lose the game. But all in all, rather impressive performance by Mr. Orton.
Yeah, I found myself pulling for Kyle Orton a little bit. You know, after the last time we had heard of Kyle Orton, he was losing his job to Tim Tebow. Even with all those, he was putting, Kyle Orton, people forget, was putting up huge numbers in that Denver offense. I mean, he was throwing for 400 yards with regularity, but Denver was losing a lot of games 38-35. He looked a lot like Tony Romo out there running that offense. And he also looked a lot like Tony Romo at the worst possible moments, too. Like, he was watching a little too closely, because he throws the soul-crushing interception. And that might as well have been number 9 back there doing the exact same thing. Right when just pulled a perfect Romo, right when you think the Cowboys have got them where they want them, they're only down 2. All they need is to just drive down, get the field goal, escape with the win, make the playoffs. And they get the ball back after the punt, and first they boom, pick. And the game is just, all the hope just gone, all the air sucked out of the stadium. I don't even have to imagine in my mind what Jerry Jones was shouting to himself when he turned his back to the camera and they show him in his box. I have a feeling it wasn't a golly gosh darn or anything like that. There's only one word that comes out of your mouth when you yell like that. We know what it was. It wasn't nice.
Well, no, it might have been Hawk Harrelson. It might have been, dang!
Yeah. God damn it. Like, you know, that's a good Hawk story that we'll have to tell during baseball season. One of those midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning West Coast games, just probably figures nobody's watching and just drops a nice GD right on the air. But no, I did feel bad. I did feel bad. I thought people were throwing just Kyle Orton to the wolves, thought he was just unprepared, not giving this guy his fair shake. I think you and I both knew better. I mean, he...
Yeah.
Perfectly serviceable NFL backup. Completely.
He,
you could do a lot worse.
He had to work his way into the game. You know, he had to kind of, yes. you know, settle in. His best move in the first quarter was the hard count. It wasn't any throw that he made because he kept moving the chains by drawing Philadelphia offside. So I was kind of laughing at that and thinking, well, maybe this will be how he does it all night. I don't know. But eventually he got warmed up and actually was making throws downfield. And it was just – he was throwing behind Witten all night. It wasn't that that last throw only. It seemed like he had a problem all night with that. And that's something, unfortunately for them, that's probably something that he would have corrected in the next week's game because he just hadn't played in a game so long. He probably – you know, was just a little bit off with his timing, and he probably would have, if he could have made it to the playoffs, he probably would have corrected that next week hosting the New Orleans Saints, and it might have been a very good game, but we'll never know now.
Well, realistically, the Eagles were the team out of that crap division who probably deserved the most to go to the postseason. I think they cured a lot of their problems at home. I believe they actually finished 4-4 at home this year, which is shocking. I mean, that's amazing for that Eagles team that at one point we were convinced couldn't win at home at all, and then had a nice 6-2, I want to say, on the road, 4-4 at home. Well, it's sort of the opposite of the way you figure you'll normally do it, but still 10-6. Kudos to them. They got hot at the right time. They're definitely a hot team going into the playoffs. Interesting matchup, them hosting the Saints, because this is weakness on weakness this week. This is a horrible road team against a horrible home team. This should be fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I was looking at that matchup already as well. I have no idea which way I'm going to go, because Philadelphia is as capable of laying a turd at home as anybody, but we shall see about that one.
Well, I have to tell you, you should feel pretty good, because usually I am – all I see are these playoff matchups for some reason, and I know who I want for every game as these matchups are all, like, percolating in my brain. And this is an extremely hard-to-read week, picks. I don't
really?
– I'm just not looking at these games. For me, it is. Now, I don't know if that's good news for you or bad news, but normally – now, we know this isn't my week. Next week, that's my week. But I'm looking at these matchups, and, boy, it's really hard not – I mean, it's hard not to make a case for either team or like, you know, not try. I'm trying – I don't want to get too smart for my own good. It's like, you know, don't want to, like, outpick myself here, especially with this lead. I'd probably feel better if we were even going into the playoffs, and I was just picking the games for picking the games. Now I'm thinking about – oh, I don't want to give points back here by making a stupid pick. It's like, it's tough playing with a lead. I'm not used to this.
Yeah, because you know that my style of picking in the playoffs is drive myself crazy thinking about the outcome of each game and go back and forth and make up my mind at the last second. So it's interesting to hear you exclaiming that you might be in a similar situation with some of these picks. Because, yeah, usually you know exactly who you want, boom, as soon as you see it. And,
yeah,
you mentioned
my brain is at odds with some things right now.
You mentioned about not trying to be too smart for your own good. That reminded me of the one last thing I wanted to mention about the Philadelphia-Dallas game, which may play into my pick in that Philly-New Orleans playoff game, was that indeed Chip Kelly was almost too smart for his own good. I thought there might be some times where he took chances and made some play calls that were – unusual and may backfire on him, and that's exactly what happened. He had at one point he had a Smith to Foles throwback play called, I didn't understand that, trying to throw a touchdown to the quarterback. That was way too cute. That last possession, he got his quarterback sacked with 2 minutes to go before they punted, and it was third and four, and he has the number one running back in the league. You need to run that ball, son. I'm sorry. And that almost cost him, except Kyle Orton turned it over the very next play. But I figured he might be a little too smart for his own good, and it almost backfired. It almost cost him the football game, and I wonder if he's going to pull some more of that stuff this coming Saturday night against the Saints.
That's an interesting game, because that, like I said, that is not a Saints team that does anything on the road. So it'll be really, really interesting to see how this one shakes out, see how we pick this game, because every game now gets the full treatment. We had a little preview of that last week before all the technical glitches, but every game now gets every game is a highlight game now. Every game gets, we'll give our X factors, which is always fun, especially when they pan out. Because we never keep, nobody cares if they turn into no factors, but it's always fun when you pull out an X factor who just goes completely, you know, batshit insane. And I think I've had a few more of those over the years. I seem to always have one every year where it's like, wow, where did this come from? I just didn't think I'd have one in the regular season.
Yeah, I can't touch your Trendon Holiday from last year. I could never duplicate that one, especially since you called the upset of Denver to happen despite him going off in the kick game. That's exactly what happened. And then, yeah, this year, very nice with Randall Cobb, who decided to lay low and not try to do too much and just make himself open for those two touchdown passes, which is exactly what they needed to win the game. So, like I said before, you can't get too much bigger of an X factor than that. So that last AFC spot in the last couple of minutes that we got wound up being just a crazy situation going down to the last games in the afternoon, where Baltimore had a chance to make themselves eligible and couldn't get it done against Cincinnati. The Miami Dolphins had a chance to make themselves eligible. They wound up bowing down at home to Geno Smith and the New York Jets. And then in the afternoon, the San Diego Chargers lined up with an opportunity to make the playoffs. They can beat Chase Daniel, Nile Davis, and the Kansas City Chiefs. And the Chiefs, with their second stringers, basically outplay the Chargers the entire game and can't win the game at the end because their kicker misses a 41-yard field goal. And San Diego gets the ball in overtime and runs a fake punt at one point, which it looked like the person running the fake punt, Eric Weddle, actually fumbled the football, but they didn't go back and review it. They just said he got a first down and he was ruled down by contact, which looked like a really, really weird call to me. But San Diego gets the bounces, gets the breaks, and they get to go to Cincinnati on Sunday afternoon to play in the playoffs as a result of that.
Well, you had to be a little happy to see the Chargers. I mean, it didn't make it into the show as much as it should have. Your love of the San Diego Chargers this year, your praise of them, made it into the pregame and the postgame show a lot more, but I don't think a lot of that love, your overflowing love for the new England Patriots that are the San Diego Chargers, a lot of that didn't make it on air. So I figured you was being kind of happy that they made it, although making it not being so happy on the other side because you got screwed by the Chiefs again.
22 starters on offense and defense, and 20 of them were deactivated or didn't play. And they still covered the 9.5-point spread. I was the only one to pick San Diego. Even the coin, went 11-5 this week and beat both of us again, knew better than to go against the Kansas City Chiefs. It's incredible. That's going to do it for our half hour here. My throat is trying to give out on me completely, so if it's gotten weaker as the show went on, I apologize. But yes, Friday night, we will be back to make our picks for the first round of playoffs, the wild card round. We will see y'all back on the other side of this music. And that takes us into our after-show portion of the program, where we can move into a little bit more of...
Yeah. This cold or flu you've been carrying around has been going for quite a while now. This has got to be a week now?
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't call it a flu. I feel great compared to whatever night that was last Friday, where you called and we were supposed to do a show. We had to cancel it because I was feeling so terrible. Basically, the next day after that, I felt great. However, this cough had stayed then all the way through today. The cough did not go away like that. And, it's on me. I've been lazy. I haven't gone to the store and got any cough syrup or cough drops or anything like that. I've been basically just trying to stave it off and you know, well, I feel good, so it'll go away eventually. Well, no, it really hasn't. But I definitely wouldn't call it the flu because other than the cough, I feel, wonderful.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good, though. You definitely Saturday was something. That was definitely an interesting show. Like I told you before we went on air, I don't have the heart to go back and listen to myself babble for 5-6 minutes on air by myself without knowing if I'm live. For people who weren't listening to that show, well, like I said, if that was the first time anybody ever listened to our show, they're not back. At least that's the way it feels to me. It was such an uncomfortable silence when you go just dead air on me in mid-sentence and I'm just left just completely, almost literally in the dark. Am I on? Hello? Oh, boy. Yeah, I'm trying to make rational football thoughts and then wonder where the hell you are, just kind of like kill some time. Just, we knew there would come a time and a place where one of us might have to carry a show by ourselves and have our thoughts, but was not expecting that completely on the fly. So I was glad you made it back. I was glad you made it back for that show. I just figured you were having such a bad season, you just decided to bail on the whole thing. Ah, fuck this, just get off the air. So.
You just walk down in the middle.
Yeah, total Jonathan Martin, just walk out, take your ball and go.
Slam my lunch tray down and just walk off,
That's right. I was bullying you.
People might be back. We have people who listen to this show every week. We don't have zero listeners. And the shows haven't been too much more better than what we did on Saturday night when I completely left the show for 5 minutes. So maybe people who heard the screw-ups, because I've screwed up at least once every show, I think, this season. I was keeping a running tally for a while there, and I finally gave up. So maybe that, the big fuck-up, maybe the last regular season show, the huge one, this is the big one, Elizabeth. Maybe that'll get more listeners. Maybe people did come back because they want to hear if we were going to have a major screw-up like that again, which hasn't quite happened yet, unless you want to count my voice being completely shot as a screw up, but I don't know. I didn't think it was that bad. I did go back and listen, and you did fill the time. It sounded like you were right at the ledge of getting exasperated and giving up and hanging up the phone at the moment that I got back in. So it sounded like you were right at the verge there, but until that point, you filled in. You made noise, open mouth, say shit. That's what you did. That's actually what I want to call our show in the off season. The open mouth, say shit editions of In Much Less Detail, because we're not going to be breaking down any football games. So you basically did the first episode of open mouth, say shit for 5 minutes there, and I think it went well, personally.
When we referenced horrible moments in podcast history, that definitely took the cake for me. It wasn't as humorous. It's funny now, but at the time I was sweating. But no, the funny one to me was if you can go back and listen to that episode where you couldn't get the starting theme to turn off. And you're yelling in the background like, live radio, folks, and I'm cracking up on air. because the theme music just won't stop, and the theme music runs for 2 minutes of the show. That was a glorious moment in podcast live radio history. So it was nice to get a little recap of the of the two games that we highlighted, because those were really those were playoff games. I mean, those were the most meaningful games, and of course the Chargers got it. I pointed it out on the blog that I was very happy that the Chargers made it in, because I didn't want anything to do with the Steelers. I don't care how robbed they feel about the horrible officiating or the silly calls in that San Diego game. Fuck Pittsburgh. I did not want to see the Steelers. They did not earn their way into the postseason. San Diego, for what they are, sure, they're probably going to go to Cincinnati and get destroyed. We'll find out Friday what I think about that. At least that's a fun team, at least that's a team that's going to be capable of putting up points. It's somebody new. It's not just the same stalwarts every year. So I do like that there's a little new blood. Completely out of left field, though. I never would have thought neither one of us had the Chargers in the postseason. At some point, we can go back and do a little breakdown of how we were on our division picks, but got a few wrong, a couple wrong that I thought I would have right. Did not see the Saints yakking up the NFC South to the Panthers, but that happened. Now the Panthers, conversely, tried to yak that up in that game against Atlanta. They definitely played to the level of their competition, and they needed a pretty massive comeback effort of their own to take that from Atlanta. And Atlanta was, I pointed this out also on the blog, Atlanta was scrappy those last 6 weeks or so. That they actually did rack up some covers. They didn't win games. But they covered a lot, and we both saw, we recognized that late, and they almost got Carolina. If that Atlanta team was full strength, that they're probably not in that 4-12 position. But they dug themselves into that hole early and just could never bail their way out of it. But if you, as such as myself, have any rooting interest in that team, I don't think you're depressed like most people would be after a 4-12 season. I think you realize that they're not that far away from getting back some of their previous swagger.
Yeah, we talked about it more, I think, off the air, that Atlanta was going to be possibly one of those teams that sort of FedEx mails it in so early in the season that they have a chance to rebound and bounce back and put forth some good efforts late in the season, because there's jobs on the line and there's some personal pride at stake. And I thought Houston might be another version of that, because they just kept falling down after they started 2-0. And I figured eventually they would bounce back up after they got officially eliminated from the playoffs, that maybe they would turn their heads around and fight back and play to their talent level. And it just never happened. They lost 14 games in a row in the Houston Texans after being everyone's darling to keep going, continue to make progress and win the AFC South this year. The Houston Texans after that are now on the clock.
So what did you think of all these coaches getting fired? Of course, we had Black Monday. So you still got some rumors swirling around about guys that might be gone. I think Joe Philbin's the most recent one in Miami who's maybe he's gone, maybe he's not. But did anything surprise you? Guys got fired, guys that didn't?
The first thing I wanted to talk about as far as the coaches go is, I know I'm fixating a little bit, but back to Lovie Smith. I just wanted to mention real quick about hearing Adam Schefter on the Booyahs one of these past mornings. Expressed the news that the Houston Texans had interviewed Lovie Smith. This is before he got hired, obviously, today by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And Shefty relaying the news that the Houston Texans had interviewed Lovie Smith, and furthermore, the news was they actually liked him. They didn't hire him after, Bill O'Brien became available from Penn State. But this was news that a team interviewed Lovie Smith and actually liked him for the position. And the reason I wanted to bring this up is because, okay, something's got to get done now about this Rooney Rule. I don't know what. I don't have all the answers. This should not be fucking news that someone interviewed a coaching candidate and actually liked him for the job. You should like the coaching candidate that you interview anyway. The fact that a black man got interviewed and it was a news item that they actually liked him, that's just so crazy. There's something wrong with this rule. Again, I don't have the answers, but there's something wrong with the rule in which it's general knowledge that a lot, not all, but a lot of the guys getting brought in for the interviews are not going to get the job at all, not even a chance. And the fact that, again, that this was a news item just kind of stunned me. And like I said, something's got to be changed. I don't know what exactly, but something different's got to be done.
I wish I could remember. I wish I had the photographic memory and I could remember the names. But back right after the Rooney Rule was put into place, you got this wave of black coaches and black assistant coaches who basically just every single time there was a job opening, one of these guys would get called in, and you knew what was going on. It was almost worse than if you didn't have the Rooney Rule, because you were almost making a mockery of it. And it was going on for quite a while until you finally started to see the wave, you know, and you started to see more black coaches getting brought into the league and having success, and you thought, okay, we're actually starting to get past this. But there were a few of these coordinators getting brought in every time somebody had an opening, and you knew it was a total sham. And I felt really bad, and I think that we could be past this, because you know when there's a name, you know, we instantly gets linked, and Bill O'Brien was instantly getting linked to the Texans. Just hire the guy.
Yep.
I mean, aren't you almost making it worse by just, you know, this is who you want. You know, I mean, if all of a sudden Bill Cowher said that he wanted to go to one of these jobs, you're just going to hire him, right? And she's going to fly the jet out there.
No, 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 no. You have to stand outside the door until we interview, Jim Caldwell. You have to stand there before you come back. We have to interview Mr. Caldwell first, and then we'll get to you, Mr. Cowher.
Yeah. So, yeah, it does. This is, I think we're getting past the point where they need this rule, because the Texans didn't want to hire Lovie Smith. They had no intentions of hiring Lovie Smith. And from the beginning, Lovie Smith was tied into the Tampa job. You heard right away, he had interest in them. They had interest in him. This was going to be like a perfect marriage. And you know what? If they wanted Lovie Smith all along, hire him. They didn't have to interview a white guy. Just be done with this. Be above this, right? Just be above the thing. If everything is above board and you're worried about this, then there's a problem. But it becomes almost such a joke that they're bringing these guys in now with no intentions of actually giving them the job. And every once in a while, you'll have one of these coaches, one of these, you know, black assistant coordinators go in, and then they get the job, and everybody's like so shocked. Oh, we didn't see him getting the job. This must be the Rooney Rule at work. No, maybe the guy actually went in and gave a good interview because they wanted this guy to be their coach. You know, what are your job qualifications? I'm black. No, wait. Oh, wait, you know what? You're right. You're hired. Come on.
Yeah.
All
right. Friday night. Friday night, 10 p.m. Central, live right here, blogtalkradio.com/inmuchlessdetail, the wild card picks. We get the playoffs started. Playoffs? This broadcast is copyrighted. He's Jay. I'm Dre. We will see y'all Friday night.